Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got comedian, podcaster, life coach, the mighty Leo Flowers. If you're not familiar with Leo's stand-up, it's everywhere that you find stand-up comedy. Go seek it out. I would say get yourself out to a show, as it's the best way to experience stand-up comedy. But we're still in lockdown, and stand-up comedy has been canceled. And I'm thinking a lot about all of my artist friends out there who are currently being told that you should be using this time to pivot to something else. You should be using this time as efficiently as possible, because once this lockdown is over, it's going to be a million people with a million projects that they've been working on really hard. And if you spend any time taking care of yourself, or napping the day away, or watching television, you're going to be so sorry you did, because there's a million people out there who are working during this thing. You should write a screenplay. You should start a podcast. You should develop a web series. You should have a brand new hour of stand-up ready to hit the road with the moment this thing is done. And is it helpful for you to hear that on days when your depression is keeping you stuck in bed? Is it helpful at all to hear that on days when you're feeling completely uncreative, uninspired, and unable to summon anything, let alone yourself, out of bed? I don't know that it is. So here's what I say. I say it's a great time to do other things that maybe you were afraid to try, or you don't know if it's something you're interested in and you just want to give it a shot. If you have some ideas kicking around that might make a good screenplay, start writing one. If it's not your jam, stop. The only thing any of us are really required to do is to make sure that we are not irreparably harming ourselves physically, emotionally, or mentally. And that's it. Just take care of yourself, whatever that looks like. There will be people who are telling you you're doing it wrong. We live in an internet culture. But no one has ever lived through an apocalypse like this. Not in our lifetime. We just haven't. Not in this country, anyway. We've never seen anything like this. And so, are we doing it right? I don't know. How are we going to come out the other end? I don't know. I do know that worrying about those things and worrying about your value based on something you're good at doing, rather than based on who you are, is not the right way to be. You know what? I like you how you are. And you know who else probably would if he ever met you? Leo Flowers. So you know what? Why don't we talk to Leo? Let's talk to Leo.
I'm a tea drinker myself. So for me, let's have a little tea, put a little honey in there, a little lemon, and let's see what the day tastes. You know, let's get a little fresh air, breeze on the face, and see what happens.
Yeah, see, that's exactly it. That's the whole point. I mean, it's not even necessarily about the coffee, but the idea of having something of your own that you can put your intention into, start the day. So tell me this, as we just jump off the deep end here.
Let's jump off, man. I got my scuba gear. I got a parasail. I got a parachute. I'm zero dark 30, baby. I'm a Navy SEAL, man. I'm prepared for land and sea. What you trying to do? Let's go.
That's great. Let's do it. Well, so first of all, let's go back just a little bit and get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
So what was your upbringing like? You were born in Chicago, right?
Chicago, man, Chi-Town, Northside. Yeah. You know, I started off at a public school, and then in the fourth grade, my mom switched me to a Catholic school. And you know, the public school was black and diverse, and this Catholic school was white and upper class, and everybody had a computer but me. So I was always going over Julie. God, I can't believe I forgot her name. God, what was her last name? The family had eight kids, and they ate dinner every night together. And
I can't believe it.
Yeah, they were Catholics, and they were devout Catholics.
Yeah.
Clearly. And then I went to high school, played football there at Lane Tech, and that was so I went from diversity to monotony,
and then
to diversity again. And then, I went to college at Ball State and played and on a football scholarship. And then I got a graduate degree and got my master's in counseling psychology. So that's just a quick bam, bam, bam.
What made you want to go into psychology?
You know, part of it is I was always a mediator. From when I was a kid, man, people would always gravitate towards me with their issues, with their problems, with their whether it was they were upset about something or they were trying to talk to they were trying to talk to a girl and what do I say to her? I was just that guy. I was a resource. I was a consultant. Even within my own family, my mom and my sister, who was 4 years younger, when they got into an argument, I was the one who had to sit them down at the table and mediate the argument between my mom and my sister. I mean, my mom would be like, "Wait till your brother comes home," you know. And I'm like, I'm 10, you know, but I'm holding court. I'm at the head of the table.
Yeah,
you know, I'm the man and the boy and the son of the house. I'm all the things. And so I at a very early age, I think that's where the pressure of not wanting to feel like a burden to anybody, because I saw that how much my mom had to do. And I think I internalized a lot of her struggle with me being the part of the source of it, meaning that she wouldn't have to work so hard if she didn't have me. She wouldn't have to, her feet wouldn't hurt, and she wouldn't have to unbuckle her pants and just flop in front of the TV if she wasn't paying for me to go to Catholic school.
Yeah.
You know, so at a very young age, I always felt like my mom would have a better life without me. And I was like, if she didn't have me and my sister, she could be traveling all over the world and doing all these wonderful things that I had conjured up in my head. And you know, and that's what, you know, when you look back, you realize that the feelings of a burden and suicidality, like it really is a lens that you are basically born with to some respect. You just I feel like a lot of us are just really empathetic and maybe overly so. We're taking in everybody's pain, which is why I can't watch the news and I can't listen to too much music all the time. And, I get overstimulated very easily by other people. And eye contact is sometimes too hard for me because I misinterpret neutral expressions. It's our hippocampus is playing a trick on us. You know, it's remembering all the bad things and the evil things and mislabeling neutral events as negative events. And is not making any room, is not storing any of the positives, any of the things we should be grateful for, any of the smiles and the hugs and the joys and the enthusiasms and the accomplishments that we've had. It doesn't store that for whatever reason, is letting those things go. And so it's a tough thing to explain to other people who don't understand it. It's like explaining a car to someone who in 13 BC, it just wouldn't make sense. So, a lot of trust was broken. My father was in and out of my life. So that created this angst of is he coming? Is he showing up? Is he going to show up like he said he would? So there was a bunch of that. And then, you know, my mom, you know, I understand, but, you know, we were whipped as a kid. The beatings were just brutal in some respects. When I look back, I'm like, you know, but it's normal at the time because you hear your friends going through the same thing. You're like, my mom beat me with an extension cord too. And you're like, oh, okay. So I guess it's normal. And it's not.
Yeah,
I'm a kid. I was in the shower. I was taking a shower. And I remember my mom came in there with an extension cord and beat me for something. I forget what it was.
At least there wasn't a toaster attached to it.
Because your other friends are going through the same thing, you're like, okay, this is normal, but it's not, and it's not healthy. And so it's when people say, well, why do you have these feelings of wanting to end your life? I couldn't put, there's not a button. It's an accumulation. It's a buildup of things, and so that's why today, the movie scenes where with parents and kids and I can't watch anything abusive with kids in it. It's too much for me to handle, especially as I get older. I think as a kid, I was a bit more immune to it, but I'm 44 now, and violence and even neglect, it pains me in a way that I don't recall it really resonating with me when I was younger. So that's why I started my podcast. Also, you know, we both not that I wasn't diagnosed with bipolar, but I was diagnosed with borderline schizophrenia. And so,
when was good that?
In college, actually, when I was going through my undergrad program, I was doing an internship. I used to counsel inmates and married couples.
Wow.
And so when you're going through your college program, an internship, you have to take a thing called the MMPI. And the MMPI tells you, like, it's like a 500-question questionnaire. That's assessment.
Yes.
And it tells you, like, if you're bipolar, if you're depressed, if you're angry, if you're prone to violence. They give it to every cop. Every cop, anybody who becomes a cop, has to take this test. At least when I was going through that, it may have changed by now. But anyway, it assessed that I was borderline schizophrenia, which is interesting because my buddy who I grew up with had full-blown schizophrenia. It hit him at 19. Here was the guy who was clear-thinking, sharp as a tack. He was the leader. He was the guy we all followed. And then all of a sudden, he started seeing and hearing things. And then at the age of 21, he was in a home, life done, man, medicated. You know, this is 20, 30 years ago. Yeah. So he's probably still there, if not in on the streets or something like that. So I saw from an early age that people could lose their minds. You know, I played football and people were always worried about me, you know, getting physically injured, but I've seen people at a young age lose their minds.
Yeah.
And so I was like, there's no guarantees here. And that's why I started my podcast, Before You Kill Yourself, because it goes back to what you're saying in terms of, hey, before you kill yourself, make a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And see how you feel. Before you kill yourself, go for a walk. Because that window of suicidality is a small window. It feels like forever. It's like being on a roller coaster. But you know, if we really assessed it, you know, it's anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour. It usually is not as that strong after an hour. Maybe you might get a thought here and there, but that feeling, that urge, you know, I call mine a sandstorm. And when that sandstorm comes through, it's brutal. And sometimes it's not even a brutal sandstorms that scare me. It's like those little cool breezes, those little whispers that just sneak in when you just, you know, sitting there having a good time and you're like, ooh, what was that? You know?
Yeah.
those are the scary ones. You're like, what the fuck? You're like, yeah, those are a little furious, you know?
I could probably take this cocktail fork and pull an eye out.
Yeah.
That'd ruin the party.
Those are the ones. Yeah, man. You're like, oh man, I thought I left you in the car. You know, I thought we were good for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know?
It just doesn't work like that. It's and to have all of those, pressures from an early age, that's got to shape your behavior set to a degree. Were you an avoider of things? Did you find yourself avoiding?
Oh yeah. You know, it's like when you feel like you have to not only be a son, but a father, a husband, a mediator. When you grow up feeling like you have to wear all these hats and keep it all together so that everybody else can function. You don't make room for your emotions. You don't make room for your feelings. So you learn very early to just close off. And you also learn, you know, growing up on the streets, that when you do express emotion, that it gets shut down very quickly. And there's no room for that. And it's either, you're either told to get over it or you're made fun of for it. So you learn very quickly to find ways to cope, whether through sports or through academics or fortunately for me, it was never drugs or alcohol or probably just because unfortunately I was so athletic and just loved being outdoors that I would just ride my bike until the emotions subsided. And then I'd be pissed to have to ride home because I'd be angry during the ride. And, you know, I'd be, like, you know, 100 miles from the house, and then I'd be sad riding back, you know. So,
it's like that thing that really angry people get when they put holes in walls, you know.
Absolutely.
It's like, now you got to patch a hole.
I did that once in college. I was like, let me try this whole punching a hole in the wall, and I didn't know anything about support beams. You know, I didn't know anything about that. Man, when I tell you I hit that beam and broke a knuckle in my hand, I was like, all right, man, this shit look cool in the movies, but in real life, you gotta get like one of those
beam finders.
Yeah, you gotta get a stud finder before you punch it. They don't show you that in the movies, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other podcast. Before you punch something.
Yeah.
So when did you start the podcast?
Yeah, I started it in the Before You Kill Yourself podcast in 2000. This is 2020, December 2018. And we're almost at 200 episodes. And I have everybody on because what I've learned and just from studying myself and talking to other people who have thought about ending their lives and also just reading the books and hearing the stories is excuse me, a lot of people don't know how to take care of themselves. We don't know just the basics of sleep hygiene, foods we should eat, how to nap, communication. A lot of us are just horrible communicators, and then we get in relationships and all of a sudden we should know how to communicate, and it's, and
yeah,
that's just not how it is. And so if we've grown up in a dysfunctional household, we haven't witnessed healthy communication, and so it becomes harder to form bonds with people, and harder to it's easy to talk to somebody when things are good, but when shit hits the fan or when somebody says something that hurts you, that's the thing, that's the one emotion that I don't think is talked about enough. It's hurt. You know, everybody talks about depression. We all talk about pain and anger, but hurt, man, that's hurt and sadness are like, if I feel like if more people could find a way to express their hurt, express their sadness, you know, when I work a life coach and when I'm working with my clients, getting them to express the sadness that we usually feel behind our eyes, getting them used to saying, for a guy to say to your girl, hey, what you just said hurt, that is such a vulnerable position to put yourself in, because it's hard for most guys.
Yeah.
And then most women don't even know how to handle that. They haven't heard a guy talk like that before.
Right.
So now they're looking at you and you're looking at them and you're both like two deer stuck in a headlight. But that's the importance of either going to a coach or going to therapy or, you know, just or reading the books. But it's really something that a lot of people, a lot of couples, we need a mediator. We need somebody who understands the subtle nuances of communication. And hey, here's what you're really saying. And here's what you're really saying. And here's where you two meet in the middle. And you go, oh, shit, like, I had no idea. And now we have compassion. We have empathy. But it all starts with vulnerability, right? I'm just saying, you know what? I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. Well, getting in touch with yourself as a human being is a pretty tall order for a lot of people who have all of these obstacles in their way of just sitting down and listening to the silence of their own thoughts just for 5 fucking minutes. It can be a lot to ask someone to reckon with something that's been kind of driven into them by force for decades sometimes. So coming around to this idea of exposing a vulnerability, of, you know, showing your stomach to something with teeth is what it feels like. You know what I mean? It's that same kind of fear that enters you of, what if this doesn't go well? But being able to process sadness, hurt, and fear is a giant leap forward for anybody.
It's so massive, man. But we don't really see that in movies. We don't see hurt. We don't see sadness. We don't see fear. We see anger, and we see we see a lot of dismissiveness and avoidance.
Stoicism.
And stoicism. Oh, that's the big thing now, being stoic. And now they're trying to push these psychedelics on us so we can microdose our feelings away.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's like, you know, it's why I haven't – when I went to a therapist, she tried to put me on – she wanted to put me on antidepressants. And I was like, lady, you haven't even looked at my sleep history. You haven't even done an MRI or a CAT scan to see if I have any swelling up there. You haven't even – done a thyroid check or a hormone check, all these things that you should be asking me about or asking me to check in on before you put me on antidepressants, because I just told you I played football in high school and college. And we both know that there's CTE, and, you know, I've had, I woke up paralyzed twice playing college football, and I have 6 bulging discs in my neck. So I'm constantly under chronic pain. So I have all these things, and you think an antidepressant is going to be the solution. It's like, I'm, listen, I got, there's so many other things that I'm not against. Anybody listening in, I'm not against any type of medication. I believe definitely that it saves lives. However, I think that there needs to be a more extensive protocol before we put most people on medication.
And I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
And the reason why it doesn't exist is because it's costly, right? Like, it costs money for an MRI, for a CAT scan, for a thyroid check, all these different things. But if we're really talking about effective, permanent change, then these are the things that we also have to consider.
Yeah, being able to treat someone as a whole human being and looking at the external factors as well as just the symptoms is an approach that it doesn't seem like it's really taking off. But I think that it's starting to among the people. There's more and more resources out there for people to be able to try some things out. And, you know, it's akin to what I was saying at the top of this, where I had this idea that that if I didn't have my medication for some reason, would I be able to handle myself?
Mm.
And it's a good thing to know about yourself, is to check in with what your issues really are. Because, I mean, like any other human being, first you've got to understand your own bullshit. Like, how are you lying to yourself? What are you being lazy about? And you can absolutely be lazy in taking care of your mental health. I mean, we all do it about everything, but you can certainly look for answers to fall on you. And there are cases where medication definitely is a godsend for some people, because you can't reason with chemicals all the time. Mm. You know, if your brain isn't making the right cocktails, sometimes you need a new bartender. It's just a fact for some people. But this idea that you're going to take a handful of pharmaceuticals and throw it at a group of people, and because six of them got help, you know, it's an acceptable number. You know, it's a very interesting thing, because it in a way it is cheaper to start somebody on a trial of maybe, rather than take the time and effort to really work it out, because it is a lot more than just mental health on the line. There's so many other factors involved. You've got to get to know a person if you're going to help a person.
Absolutely. You know, I have a friend who his mom was in Brazil or Costa Rica somewhere, and 80 years old. And every day she would get up and walk down to the farmer's market and get the food for the day and come home and cook. And then her kids who live here in the States were like, "Mama, you're 80, you're old, you got to come up here so we can keep an eye on you and keep you healthy." And she fought it for a while. And finally she was like, "All right." So she comes up here. But so they've taken her out of her routine. They've taken her out of her daily routine. They've taken her out of her culture. They've taken her out of her way of living. They've removed her access to fresh foods on a daily basis. And so now she's in this house where she's supposed to be comfortable and supposed to be a better place for her and a safer place. But now she's gaining weight because she's not making that daily trek every morning. It's not safe to really walk. There's not a farmer's market in walking distance. And she doesn't understand all the nuances of where to go and how to get back. And so her first year here, she was in and out the hospital three times and died in like the first 2 years. So when we talk about mental health, we're also talking about societal health. We're also talking about the environment and how that affects us. And how does your environment nudge you to take care of yourself? It's like, you know, I'm in a house right now and I take three steps, I'm outside. I walk down some stairs and boom, there's a park, bam, 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 makes it very easy. But if I'm on the 30th floor of a penthouse, I'm probably going to think twice about, do I want to walk down the hallway, get on the elevator, wait for the elevator,
yeah,
go down, walk through the lobby, walk out the door, and then walk another mile. Listen, I'm staying in.
Yeah.
So our environment also determines how we move and how we see things and how we feel about life. If you live in an urban environment where it's a concrete jungle, where you're not, and there's no grass being grown, and you're not really seeing life, you're not seeing trees, you're not hearing birds, you're not able to touch grass and nature, and you don't have access to that kind of thing, it kind of warps the way you see the world and the way you see life, you know? And so we can't deny that what we're witnessing. And that's just the real life example. Also, like, what are we watching on television? It's like,
yeah,
are we watching Law and Order, SVU, and Forensic Files, and Cops, and CSI? Are we just watching victims and attackers? Is that creating our framework for what the world is like? So. Are we watching nature shows? Are we watching travel shows? Are we watching Masterclass? Are we watching documentaries that enrich us and add to our conversations and add to the way we connect with people? These are all things we have to be intentional about. And we like you said, we can't be lazy about how we're feeding ourselves, about how we're feeding ourselves visually, about how we're feeding ourselves nutritionally. All these things we have to be intentional about, and I'm not saying this not to be militaristic, and not that we don't have fun and that we don't eat cake, right? I'm not saying don't watch Narcos or Game of Thrones. These things that also connect us, but
Game of Thrones and Narcos are like visual cake. It's a sometimes food.
Absolutely,
it's not something you can fill your brain with all the time.
Right. Absolutely. And so what we're talking about, I'm not talking about an elimination diet, which is what so many of these books, these self-help books are like, get rid of your fear, get rid of, like, we're so busy getting rid of stuff. When do I get to enjoy anything? Right. If we're canceling this, we're getting rid of friends, we're deleting this and that, and trying to lose weight. Like, when do I get to enjoy any of it? When do we about enjoying life, how to savor our experiences, more of those conversations, right? Why do I have to keep running from the COVID and stay inside and wear a mask versus, hey, these are just fruits and vegetables that are in season right now. Here's how to make a kale raisin, mango. This is just, what I mean? Here's how to talk to your neighbors. Here's how to make a friend when you're past 40. Where are these conversations at? And don't show me another video of a cop doing something to a black person. All right, because I'm not falling for your distraction. I'm not falling for that trick, right? Because I've seen way more cops wave. I've seen way more cops help people. I've seen way more people connect and hold hands, and I've seen way more strangers coming together for no other reason than to come together. That's the beauty of a sporting event. If anything tells you the nature of this world or this country is a sporting event, because nobody's asking you what your gender is. They're not asking you how you voted. It's everybody of every race, of every culture, 50,000 people all cheering, all walking in peacefully, all walking out peacefully. Every now and again, there's a fight, but that's why it makes the news, because it's a rare event. For the most part, we're all getting along, right? Trying to get from A to B. So when we remember these things and we zoom out from ourselves, they talk about when we feel hopeless, the antidote is to be helpful. Right. Is to sometimes the hopelessness is a focus too much on ourselves. And I'm always, when I'm life coaching my clients, I'm always getting them to focus on to think about other people. Here's an example. going back to me feeling like a burden to my mom, right?
Yeah.
A year ago, I said, you know what? Let me take this and become more curious and ask mom. I go, you know, why did you have us? You could have had a much richer life, a much more vibrant life and seeing more things. And she said, all I wanted was to have you. All I wanted was to be a mom and raise children. And it floored me, because really what I also realized is I was projecting my values. As a kid, I loved to travel and I never wanted to feel trapped, or I never wanted to feel like I couldn't go anywhere. I hated boundaries. I hate rules and restrictions, and anything that even reeks of that, I want nothing to do with it. And so to me, her having a job was a trap, and it is 9-to-5 grind. I detested it as a young boy. I was like, I was like, that's not the world for me. And so it's through curiosity that we can have more compassion for each other. But that goes back to the vulnerability piece of saying, hey, I just want to ask you a couple questions. I just want to dig a little deeper and so I can understand you more and understand us more and see if I'm thinking about this in the right way. And then it helps to let the air out the balloon, you know?
Well, curiosity is, I'm so glad that you brought that up. It really is the key to a lot of things, because I think that people lack a curiosity because we've placed this value on knowing everything. And we tell people all the information's at your fingertips. And so people feel dumb when they don't know something. And so they don't want to ask questions. But I would much rather ask questions and look dumb for a minute, but get the answer. Like, you can make fun of me, but you got to tell me what I don't know. And then we'll figure it out. I understand people wanting to engage with their anger on things when they see things that upset them. It's almost like there's a lot of areas, and I feel this as well, especially when you're feeling like there's a lot of areas in your own life that are lacking, and there's something that's not being fed. There's something in you that's not being nurtured, and it feels like there's holes and there's pieces missing. And there's these wells of sadness that are not necessarily being addressed or even understood. And then something comes in to fill that void. And something will always come in to fill a hole if you present one. There's always something. There's always an outrage. There's always something to be upset about. And I'm not saying that things to be outraged about don't exist. Because I believe that there's a reason for all of that. There's a purpose for all of that. But the question that you have to ask yourself in any given situation is, this is what's happening out in the world. And now who am I going to be? Who do I show up as when the world is like this? What do you think about that?
Man, I love the way you phrase that, man. It's such a beautiful thing. And it makes me think about, you know, going back to, the clips that they're showing in the news today with the police violence and just even things our politicians are saying and the COVID and all the fear mongering that's taking place. At the end of the day, I still got to take a shower.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I still have to brush my teeth. I still have to set, tiny goals for myself. I still have to kiss my girlfriend, goodnight. I still have to call my mom. Still have to work out and go for a walk and get vitamin D. I have to journal, I have to meditate. These are things that, and I say have to, but really the beauty is in recognizing that I get to do these things. I can, yes. I still get to journal. I still get to exercise. I still get to read. I'm reading three books right now. I'm reading Malcolm X, George Washington, and Genghis Khan. It usually couldn't be three more different people, but I still get to meditate, and I still get to self-talking. And so what's beautiful about recognizing what you still get to do is you go, okay, I still have some control. There's still some things within my control that whatever I'm watching can't take away from me. Yeah. And if I can still have my cup of coffee in the morning, right? Yeah. If I can still, whatever your anchor is, if my anchor is still there, then we got something to work with. And this is, can't be too crazy. My anchor is there. Now, if we wake up one morning and the anchor is not there, then we ask ourselves, did I even need the anchor? Or, you know, we find another anchor. The anchor is there really just to show you that you can create your own anchor. Like that cup of coffee you have in the morning is only as powerful as you made it. Because it doesn't have to be a cup of coffee, right? It could be a walk in the morning. It could be calling your mom first thing in the morning. Like you created that anchor. And so if that anchor is taken away, if your relationship ends, right? Remember, you found that relationship. So if it ends, you can find another relationship at some point. But in the meantime, this is a chance for you to make an assessment, to check in with yourself. To, hey, am I all right? You know, when I played football, you know, you played a game and you didn't play another game right after that. You went back into the locker room and the athletic trainer looked at your knees and your ankles and is there any swelling and maybe you got two aspirin and you slept the night and you didn't even practice the next day. You got to rest the next day. And then on Monday you looked at the film and you did an assessment. And then Tuesday you practiced. And what I mean is, so when we experience loss, we have to take time to check in with the athletic trainer, with a therapist or a coach, and see, hey, you know, here's the loss. Here I'm grieving. I'm feeling some anger, some denial, frustration. And here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about ending my life. All right, you know, boom, boom, boom. We'll get you some aspirin, whatever that's going to be, and take a couple of days. Don't push yourself too much. Just kind of take it easy. And then on Monday we'll start to journal. We'll start to look at things, and we'll make a game plan for the next game. That's all we can do is start to slowly strategize for the next game, And you know, when I'm working with my clients, it's one of those things that helps give people power is when we start planning and we start preparing. You know, even Abraham Lincoln said, if you give them a tree to chop down, if you give them 24 hours to chop down a tree, he's going to spend 23 hours sharpening the axe. So when we go through a loss, that's our time to sharpen our axe. That's our time to double down on our practice of whatever we're doing, you know?
Well, what about the idea of when things go wrong? You make mistakes, you miscalculate, or even you just say fuck it and you decide I'm not going to take care of myself today, and then the next day comes. How do you tell people if you're having discussions with people or even for yourself? What's your thought process on how to use failure?
Wow, that's such a great question. How do you use failure? The best thing that football taught me, and I keep going back to football, but we could even do this on an emotional level. It's there when you fall in love with the process then there is really no failure, right? So, for instance, say you fail a math test, right, or some type of test. And I only bring this up because people, you know, a lot of perfectionists, a lot of students will end their life because they didn't get the grade that they wanted. And so the thing is not to get so caught up in the outcome, but to get caught up in a process and say, here's how I studied for this test, right? Here are my behaviors. Look at the behaviors. Here's what I did to study for this test. I did 1 hour a day. I went to a tutor on Monday and Thursday. I went to the teacher's office. And then you go, here's my outcome. All right. So I look at my behaviors again. And I did, because I didn't like that outcome. I got an F on that test. And you say, all right, so maybe I need to study twice a day for 2 hours. Maybe I need to talk to professor twice this week. Maybe I need a different tutor. Maybe, I need a study group. I didn't have a study group the first time. Maybe I need to find a study group the next time. Maybe I need to look at YouTube videos. Maybe I need to ask more questions. Maybe I need to sit up. I need to sit closer. Maybe I need to sit with somebody else and not, you know, Chatty McChatterson in class.
Yeah.
What are, you know, I use the analogy boa, like a boa constrictor, like a snake, right? Because a lot of us in the beginning, you asked if I was an avoider, and I was an avoider, and I try to avoid things. But I like to think of, and I know a snake is not the best visual, but when I think about a boa constrictor, it just slowly closes its grip on things. It's not avoiding anything.
Yeah.
It sees what it wants and it slowly. And so boa, B-O-A, B is behavior. What is the behavior? And then O is what it was the outcome from said behavior. And then A is what is the antidote, right? Or you can use the A as action, right? So if I'm looking at the behaviors, right, that led up to the outcome, which was the F, then I go, all right, what are the actions I'm going to take now so that when we start to cycle all over again, we have a different assessment protocol. So you can do that with school. You can do that with if you failed at business, even if you failed at your relationship, right, where the divorce, breakup or whatever, and you say, all right, in my last marriage, we didn't go to premarital counseling, and people talked about going, but I was too ashamed to go. So now I'm going to go to premarital counseling. And then we're going to keep that therapist. We didn't keep with that. We didn't get a therapist until shit hit the fan. So yeah, we're going to keep the therapist, or at least see the therapist every 6 months or every 3 months. Treat it like every time you see the dentist, go see your therapist, right? And also I'm going to join a men's group or a women's group or whatever, just to kind of vent, because I work all the time and I can't hang out with my friends the way I used to. So this is the only option that I have, and maybe it's an online group or whatever. So then we get a chance to, now we're excited. Now we're looking for a new relationship because we have a plan of how we're going to better ourselves and be better. And also that interim, you know, when you just fail something, allow yourself to feel that.
Yeah.
Feel the failure, you know, like the failure, the anger and the disappointment,
yes,
and the rage and all that, you know, feel that. I mean, you just put your heart and soul into something, and then it just crumbled, it fell apart. It didn't turn out the way you thought it would. And it's just like, I thought, because we think we've done all the things. We think I've done everything I possibly could, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's the problem, is you did everything you possibly could, but you did it by yourself. You didn't ask for help. And it shouldn't be I did. It should be we did everything we possibly could.
Yeah.
And so if you're using, you know, we notice from the literature on suicide that the use of I is one of the indicators for suicidality, because it's a demonstration of a focus too much on self. And so when we use words like we, or use words like it, where there's a slight detachment from the stimulus from ourselves, then that means that we have a more objective view of it, but we're also zooming out and having a wider lens versus thinking about I, me, me, right?
Yeah. No, so, absolutely. that whole thing of being able to distance yourself from yourself, you have to be able to take a step back, because when you're in it, when you're in that reality, it is your reality. I mean, you've got to be able to have some kind of a check on that, and to recognize the things within yourself when you know you're like that. If you know you're like that, if you can be honest with yourself and say, this is what I'm like, and I would like to change that, you can start to pay attention to those things and then modify your behavior when they come up. It's the best shot you have, because there's not always going to be somebody there to check you against yourself.
Right. Right. And you know, and I think Lewis Howes said this, this isn't for me, but he was like, invite people into your purpose.
I love that.
You know, invite people into your purpose, recruit people into your mission, right? Because we can't do it ourselves. When we go back to the analogy of failing a test, is like, you know, talk to the teacher before and after class, right? I mean, like, listen, here's what I understood you saying. Did I hear it right? Am I grasping this? Where am I? I don't understand what I don't understand. It's okay to say that, right? Recruit people, recruit your spouse into it. And I tell you what, if you're with somebody who, when you become vulnerable and they show teeth and they dig in there and they leave you bleeding on the side of a road like a carcass, that lets you know that's not a person that you want to be with, right?
Yeah.
That, if anything, you should want to know that up front. You should want to know that early on. Is this somebody I can go the distance with, or is this somebody who's going to slit my throat 2 miles in? Right.
Yeah.
So definitely show the vulnerability. Don't wait until 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road to then say, oh, you hurt me. It's like, say that on the first day. Ooh, that stung a little bit. Damn, that was a little sharp there. You know,
yeah.
Sharpie McSharpison. I don't know why I'm saying that at all. But
well, tell me this, with all of the ways that you've found to bounce back from failure and assert a level of dominance over your own life, a level of intention and putting forth the will to get through certain situations, and navigate the waters of the world as best you see fit. Tell me how that works out for you in regards to getting on stage in front of an audience that you don't actually have any idea if they're going to be hostile or not.
you know, the thing is, we don't know. We don't know anything.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of life, and that circles back to curiosity. I don't know, so I'm curious though. I'm curious if they're going to get this joke. I'm curious if I talk about when I was 9 years old and I told my mom when I turned 40 I was going to end my life. I'm curious if I share that on stage, if the audience will go with me, or if they're going to boo me, or if they're going to be angered, or if they're going to cry, or if they're going to laugh, or if they're going to, I'm curious as to what the response is going to be, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious as to what the response is going to be from the club and from my peers. And I'm curious about all of that, because we don't know. I love to use the analogy for life of being like algebra. I always sucked at algebra, but the thing I always remembered was we always had to solve for X, right?
Yeah.
Because, and that's life. There's always an X factor. There's always an unknown. No matter what we know, nobody knew, not that nobody knew about this COVID, but for the most part, most of us didn't know about this COVID. We didn't know that this was coming. Even think about this, the people who went to Harvard, went to Yale, those parents driving cars, they're like, my kid's an honor roll student. Your honor roll student kid didn't know that COVID was around the corner. So I don't care about what role he is on because he wasn't smart enough to warn us about this situation. Right. So we have to remember that there are always things out of our control. There's always an earthquake looming. There's always a hurricane around the corner. There are meteors that are constantly trying to pick us off. There's viruses trying to get in your nose. There's stuff in your water that's trying to take you down. Like we're walking around. These people are walking around with these T-shirts that say peace and calm. But like inside our bodies is a war that's being waged 24/7. There's a reason why we have white T cells. The white T cells in our body are there to fight any antibodies, any bacteria that get in there. So while you think that you are helpless, while you think that you are lazy, while you think you're doing nothing, nature is showing you that your body is literally at all times fighting for your life. At all times, there is always something that you are inhaling, drinking, ingesting, taking in that your body is like, we got to go get this mother sucker, right?
Yeah.
We got to take them out. And you have no idea. You have no idea how much nature is fighting to keep you alive. You have no idea of all the wars and battles that are being waged in your biceps and in your brain and in your legs and in your organs and all the things. Your heart's pumping, and your liver's trying to get all the toxins out, and your stomach is trying to digest that shit you order from Domino's. It's like your stomach is like, yeah, I can handle this, but damn, man, again, come on, son, we're doing everything we can, and you put it in there again. But I got you. I got you. We're fighting for you. We're rooting for you. Your organs, your bodies, your muscles, your cells, your bones, they're all rooting for you. The universe is literally conspiring to keep you alive. So those moments when we walk around and we're like, nobody cares about me, when we feel lonely, just remember that nature, when you look at trees, when you look at the sky, when you look at birds flying by, it's providing for all those people. It's providing for you from the day you were born. From the day you were born, it was like, we got to get this dude some powers. We got to make sure his eyes blink open and close, and that his mouth works, and that his arms go up and down, and that he can wave, you know, that he can hear. All these things that are happening for us, and we're not even in control. We're not even in control of those things. Those are things that are just happening.
Yeah.
Even when we're sleeping, it's just happening. When we're sleeping, your brain is like, is getting to work, and it's like, it's restoring your cells and all the damage that we've done, and your muscles and your tissues, and getting in there and cleaning out everything so you can wake up the next day and have your cup of coffee. The universe is literally at all times going to war for you.
That's absolutely profound. If that's not the greatest get out there and do it speech that I've ever heard, I don't know what it is. Listen, I could listen to you give me 10 more of these, but I think I'm already exhausted from all of the excitement. Just watching you explain the universe, I feel like I had something to do with it. Just, yeah, we went through that together. That's
absolutely, man.
Well,
we all need a co-pilot, man, and I'm glad we went on this ride together.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing what I want you to understand is that with this energy that I'm putting out is a symbiotic thing, right? It's a back and forth. You and I. Like if you're not here, I'm not having this talk. I'm not feeling this energy. I'm not enthused with this type of vitality.
I'm vibrating over here.
Yeah, man. So this is back and forth, man. So I thank you for creating an atmosphere and an environment for me to express myself in such a way. This is a beautiful thing that you're doing, man. And I'm feeling some of that coffee you drank this morning.
Well, thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you, brother.
I hope you got some rubber soles on those shoes to absorb all of the electricity that's coming off of that conversation. What a genuinely awesome dude. That was a fantastic conversation for me. I hope it was a fantastic conversation for you. And if you want to get some more Leo Flowers in your life, don't forget to check out his podcast, Before You Kill Yourself. It is available everywhere podcasts are found, and also available at leoflowers.com. You can find links to everything he's doing, any appearance he's making, including his Instagram, which is leoflowers2000. How fucking baller is that? It's better than coffee for suicide. I can't even spell it. But until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.